You're listening to the 21st Century Change Agent Show. This podcast is for those who are always looking for ways to grow as a person and as a leader. On this show, you'll find no ordinary conversations, as I will be speaking with unique people who are already rewriting the narrative. My name is Barbara Ziegler, and I help companies to achieve more by putting their people first. Head to Lakehouse Consulting website to find out more and subscribe to a bite-sized, hand-picked newsletter from me. Thank you for tuning in and get ready to receive your weekly dose of inspiration. Hello and thank you for joining me for the second part of this two-part episode with Hannah Drake. Hannah and I covered a lot of ground on the last episode. We talked about the power of language, the whitewashing of the history, and where do we begin with understanding these issues that are so ingrained in our systems. Hannah also shared various examples from lived experiences, and her message was clear. We're all part of the system, and therefore we have a part to play in conscious dismantling of it. On this episode, we will take this conversation a notch further and talk about the role white women play in the system. And are we really the innocent bystanders? As mentioned in the previous episode, some of the content we will cover today, some people might find upsetting. Once again, thank you for rejoining us. And here is the continuation of my conversation with Hannah Drake. I would love to also talk a little bit about your own page and your writing. Your writing focuses around white women specifically.
Yeah.
You talk about how they are not these innocent bystanders pretending to be marginalized alongside black females, but rather they are toxic and have perpetuated the system we live in and benefited from white privilege just as much as their white counterparts.
Yeah.
And it is not really in their interest to change anything.
At all.
So that's the word that I'm getting from your work. However, nothing in your, you know, provocative and thought-provoking work has made me, you know, shake my head and say, "Well, that's a lie," or "Who do to say that about me?" All of it has made me reflect, and none of it has made me to take it personally because it's true. But anyway, you know, I'd love to know why exactly it is the white women you focus on and what is the key message you're trying to land with them slash us, I guess.
So I really focused on a white woman, one, because I'm a woman. And if we cannot find any commonality, at least maybe let's start there, right? And I am a firm believer that as much as white men do the things that they do, there are many white women that support and are right behind and are benefiting from, are encouraging, are building up for white men to continue to do the racist things that they do. I believe that women have so much power that some of this could stop if white women really stood with black women and women of color. And so when I saw what happened in the 2016 election with Trump, and 53% of white women had voted for a man that had been openly racist, right? And so you think, so I'm going to write about this. And then you think, okay, maybe this is clicking. And then we just have an election and 55% now of white women that voted for a man that has been openly racist, openly. There was no more like pretending like, oh, in 2016, I kind of didn't know and I wasn't sure, you know, and you have clearly seen, you've lived the last 4 years, you know, that we all have. You've seen kids being put in cages. You've seen what he said about black women. You've seen how he's degraded black people. You've seen what he's done to Colin Kaepernick. And you still voted for him, which means to me that white women are voting in their interest. And their interest is racism. Their interest is racist systems because they continue to benefit them. There is no other explanation for this, right? It's not the economy. It's not. Our economy is in the trash. We are going through a global pandemic. It's racism. You're siding with the man that is racist because it benefits you. And a lot of time, white women don't want to admit that. And they want to play the, I'm marginalized. It's all women. We're all in this together. I'm being inclusive. And they're not facing that. In fact, I wrote a blog called Karen Is You. You think it's a racist white woman that may be standing side by side with her husband or boyfriend or partner with some tiki torch. But it's you. It's you at the PTA. It's you at the church. It's you at the meeting. It's you in the yoga class. It's you in the grocery store. It's you. When we look at all of these frivolous 911 calls on Black people for existing, it's white women making the calls. It's you. And that's the ugly part that many white women don't want to face. That in fact, it is me. I am Karen. I am the person that would call 911 on a Black person for walking in my neighborhood. I am that person. Like, that's an ugly truth. That's ugly to admit. And people don't want to do that. But I challenge white women to do that because I think white women have more of power. Either they're ignoring it, they're pretending they don't know. But I believe that they have a lot more power than they want to admit. You know, I heard in this movie, I'll never forget, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. This woman said, the men are the head, but the women are the neck, and the neck can make the head move any way it wants to, right? Women have a lot of power. You have a lot of power in the home where you can really impact your partner. And are you doing that? Are you having tough conversations with your partner, with your husband, with your boyfriend, with your children? Are you having those conversations? You know, I dare say I'm not seeing it happen. I'm not seeing it happen when we look at America and Biden won, but out of all of the people that voted, more than half voted for Donald Trump. And so even though Biden won, I said racism was the real winner. It shows that we still have a lot of work to do here in America. More than 70 million people voted for a man that locks kids in cages.
What really got me was one of your posts you wrote, and I'll rephrase this, is that you had more respect for KKK because they were clear about the fact that they were racist. And they don't care who you are, what you look like, you're Black, they hate you. And at least you know where you stand with them. However, with the white women, they are the ones who will post Black Lives Matter on social media. They'll tell everyone they have Black friends. They voted for Obama or Hillary Clinton because they couldn't be associated with the 53 or 54% voting for Trump. And yet there are also women who go out protesting against isolation and mask wearing.
Yep.
So that was crazy, right?
Yeah.
So they're protesting this by holding a picture of Eskrava Anastasia, and I probably didn't say her name right and apologize for that, but it reads, muzzles are for dogs and slaves. I'm a free human being.
Yeah.
Of course, we all, you know, myself included, want to turn away from that and say, well, not all white women and definitely not me, right? Okay. However, how many of those white women are in our networks? They are acquaintances that we occasionally meet for a glass of wine. They are the mums, you know, our children play with, our neighbors. They are people who are in our own families. And by turning a blind eye to them and not calling them out makes us just as much of perpetuators of those systems as those who are holding these signs.
Yeah.
And for those who still don't connect what we're talking about, let me put this in words of my gran. So she recently was telling me a story, and this is completely about a different topic, but actually the analogy works. You know, if you're in a group of kids that go stealing strawberries from a neighbor's garden, but you don't go and physically do it because you know it's wrong, but instead you watch them do it from the road, it still makes you as bad as them.
Right, right.
Because you witnessed the crime.
Yeah.
So many people believe that when they encounter racists, as you said, you know, they will be, you know, in a KKK hood, or a white man with shaved head and swastikas all over their body. But the truth is, these people will look just like your neighbor, Karen, as you say. So for me, this really hit home. And that it's not, you know, that, you know, be it your posts or what we just, what we are talking about, is not just us. It's our whole ecosystem that we might not be aware of. And yet for those who say, yeah, but, you know, what can I do about my neighbor, Karen, and what she does and what she says? You know, I don't want to be put in the same bag as her. So how do you respond to those people or those women, you know, who want to be better and do better, but just don't know where to start?
So I tell people often, a lot of white women ask this, well, I get it, and then what do I do? And I said, if you get it and you've confronted you and you totally get it, because you always have to start with yourself first and then move outwardly. I said, look, you don't have to beat people over the head with some anti-racism book, right? There are ways to talk about racism without necessarily beating people over the head. So like here, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky, and here a young woman, Breonna Taylor, was shot in her home by the police. And she was shot and killed back in March. And so there have been protests, and so many people have not wanted to go downtown because the narrative was downtown is horrible and it's burned down and blah, blah, blah. And so there's a white woman here, a politician, and she was repeating this narrative. And I told her, well, meet me downtown. Since you want to say this, I said, just take me downtown and show me what's burned down. Show me, let's just walk. And there was nothing burned. So this narrative was a lie. But she's a very influential woman that's repeating this story. And so I said, well, meet me downtown. And I didn't know that she would come, but she did. So she met me downtown and we walked and talked for a long time. And I said, so your job now is to go back and change that narrative. And you are in circles with women I will never be in a circle with, who will never read my blog, who will never come and meet me downtown. And now your job is to take everything that I have said and go back and tell them in such a way that you know they will hear it. And you can just easily, in conversation, you could be having wine and say, you know, I went for a walk downtown yesterday and it was really beautiful. And start the conversation there. It doesn't have to be, and you know, and black people weren't burning it down. It could just be that simple. You know, it's always a way to communicate with anyone, right? And so you know how to communicate with your friends and your partners and your boyfriend, your husband, your girlfriend, whatever. You know how to communicate with them. So you have this simple conversation about downtown, and then you segue into, oh, well, you know, I can understand why people are upset, because can you imagine if your daughter was at home and someone stormed in her home without knocking and killed her? So you open up and have this conversation where, because they're your friends, they're more willing to listen to you, and you get them to thinking about it in such a way where they can see themselves, right? And they can think, well, what, you know, if someone stormed in my home and killed my daughter, I would be upset. I can understand why people are mad. And then you just have more of a conversation. This will be more than a one-time thing. But you are in spaces that I can't be in. So take advantage of that. I tell white women all the time, it's great. I love that you all read my blog. That's great. But take it. Take the message with you and share it with your friends. Even in your own neighborhood, if someone is black or a person of color in your neighborhood, get to know them, and don't get to know them in a nosy way. You can bring a gift over and say, oh, I noticed you're in the neighborhood. I'm in the neighborhood. If you ever want to walk around the neighborhood together, I'd love to do that. Or if you'd ever like to have a glass of wine, I'd love to do that with you. Open up the door for a conversation. You don't have to fear your Black neighbor. You can get to know your Black neighbor. I think a lot of change in this world, it's so simple to me, would really happen if people just talk to each other. It's so simple that it seems like it has to be something bigger, when really it's not. Because the woman that I spoke with her in June. We just talked this week. Well, she is in legislation here. And she says, now when I go into the room, I'm taking everything that I learned with me from you, right? Everything that you've taught me, I'm taking it into the room with me. So when they're discussing policies that will impact the very lives of people in this state, what I've talked to her about is on her mind. And it will influence her choices and what she says in that room. But she's in that room. And I think she's the only white woman surrounded by men in politics, white men in politics. But I'm in that room with her. That's the importance of it. So who are you taking in the room with you, in a room that I will never be invited in? A Black person will never be welcomed into the circle, into the party, into the get-together, into the networking thing. Then how are you taking what you've learned into those spaces and sharing it in such a way that will impact the people around you? And it really just starts with the conversation.
And that is really powerful. You know, we don't know how to start and have simple conversations anymore. We are so afraid of constructive conversations, of a healthy debate, that we better don't start it at all.
Yeah.
We have such fragile egos. I guess that's the only way how I can describe it. Because it was a couple of days ago, on LinkedIn, there was a post that said, you know, that we've been told not to bring in politics and religion, I think it said, into our conversations, because we've never been taught how to have those conversations. And I reflected on that and I said, well, hold on a second. I can tell you from my experience, from, you know, from traveling and from having, you know, friends in Morocco, in Nigeria, in Jamaica, in you know, in the US, wherever, in Venezuela, right? When I have race and politics conversations with them, they don't shy away from them. They welcome you in and they want to talk to you about them. They welcome a healthy debate and a conversation. There is this. However, in the Western world, yes, absolutely, we completely shy away from those conversations.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't walk into those conversations with mutual respect, because we can talk with passion, we can own what we've got to say, and we can still walk away from that conversation with mutual respect.
Right.
And that's what we often just don't know how to do, just we've got such fragile egos.
Yeah.
But they'd be better don't touch it at all and just, you know, dance around, you know, purses or handbags, wherever the saying went.
Yeah, that's what we do. And then often I think people don't want to have the conversation, because then you have to look inwardly. Like I always say, it's not going to look pretty sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to admit some things that maybe you never even considered, or you considered but really didn't want to deal with. Or, you know, I wrote a blog about there were 2,000 white women had wrote this Trust Black Women letter and signed it and took this big ad out in the paper, and I wrote about that. And one of the originators of the letter, the Trust Black Women, read my blog and was offended, and then she really got to thinking, and she wrote her own blog about how her mom, they were just good white people, you know, so she thought we're just good, what, we're not racist. And her, I believe she said her brother had invited his Black friend over to swim. And after he left, her mom drained the pool. And she never knew what that was for, and then learned that her mother believed that all Black people had gonorrhea. And so she had drained the pool. And so her reading my blog brought up these things for her. Who wants to now think about, you know, my mom did that. But we're the good people. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not racist. But my mom did that. And then she talked about these other things. They had a servant, a Black guy, and he wanted his son, I believe it was, to go to Harvard. And he had asked her mother, can you write this letter of recommendation? And she didn't. And she told her kids, he's shooting too high, like to go to Harvard, you know? And so she had to look at this ugliness that was in her own mother. And so sometimes people don't want to have these conversations because it's going to bring up some ugliness and some history and some things that you kind of just don't want to face, but it's there. And by facing it is how you heal and truly deal with it.
And in the diversity and inclusion world, I have seen countless definitions for allyship and how-to guides created to steer white people down the path of racial solidarity. You know, social justice practitioners often point to allyship as an opportunity for sympathetic white people to get involved in the fight for social equity, you know, to use their privilege to call attention to injustice, you know, to raise your voices in rooms that you can't be in, ultimately, as you said. The concept of allyship has been diluted so that it metaphorically could be compared to, you know, an older kid in the schoolyard sticking up for you when you're being bullied.
Right.
You know, it helps the white people who brand themselves as one of the good ones, you know, as the good people, as you say, to enact good deeds to support their marginalized counterparts. Unfortunately, good deeds will not dismantle systematic oppression. No. So for people who put perhaps recognize themselves in this portrait or this reflection, how can they do any good anymore? How can they show up in the protests, in social media or workplaces as allies and actually be taken seriously?
I think so. There's two things I tell people. So you, for me, and I learned about this, you have an ally and you have an accomplice, right? And so an ally might, an ally might like share my blog and shared it out there, and I side with Hannah. I get what she's saying. And then I have other people. So, okay, we'll use this. This is a good example. I wrote this blog to the CEO of Churchill Downs. Churchill Downs, of course, is where they run the horses and the Kentucky Derby takes place. And I wrote this letter to him, and it immediately went viral. A lot of people were sharing it. But a person that was a real ally called me. It was a white guy. He called me and he said, I am friends with his wife and with him and with their board. And I'm going to send this letter to everyone on the board so that they can read it. And he needs to read it. So I thought, okay, that's a great step. And even further now, someone who's very influential in the city contacted me about that letter and said, has he responded to you? And I said, he hasn't responded to me. And they said, well, now we are going to step in and do something about it. Because I was challenging this organization who makes millions upon millions of dollars to give back to Black people in the community, people of color, and certainly on the backside of this, of the track, they have Black and brown people, particularly brown people, that are keeping Churchill Downs going. And so they were starting this tour. I challenged them, okay, well, you never talk about the Black people that won the first Kentucky Derby Star, so started this tour. And so this white woman sends me this information. Oh, look, Hannah, they're changing. They're starting this. And I said, okay, well, how much does this tour cost? And she said, it's $15. And I said, okay, this is where I have a problem. I said, they're telling the story of Black people who were here, people who were enslaved that worked at the track. And now I have to pay money to hear this story about Black people. I said, so you're still benefiting from the story of slavery and marginalized people. And so she's taking that issue on. They weren't listening to me as a Black woman, but her role as a white woman who has this influence and power is to now take this issue on. And then you take it on such where if they are going to charge, within 100% of those proceeds need to go back to Black people in some way, shape, or form, right? And so it's how can you really not just, even when people are protesting, and I've attended protests, and we were tear gassed and we were flashbanged and the police shot rubber bullets at us. But in the front of us was this line of white people that were willing to put their bodies on the line and say, I'm not just an ally, but I'm going to be an accomplice and work strategically with Black people to say that this cannot happen. And if you are going to tear gas someone, if you are going to shoot rubber bullets at someone, it is going to be me first. That they are willing, many of them, I must admit, many white people here are willing to be the first out front because they understand that the way racism is set up, it is less likely that the police are going to tear gas them versus if Black people were simply in front. And so to me, that's an accomplice. An accomplice can also be in the workplace. When you see Black women getting paid often less than white women, then to me, an accomplice says, Hannah, this is how much I'm getting paid for doing the same job you're doing. This isn't fair. I'm letting you know the amount I'm getting paid. And how can I work with you so that we're getting paid equally? Because this isn't right. But a lot of times in the workplace, even when I do speaking, you know, you don't even know that they have paid a white person five times more than they paid you because white people will keep that quiet. And so an accomplice says, this is how much I got paid to speak at this university, Hannah. And you should be getting paid that and then whatever else you want. But this is the minimum because this is what they paid me. And so now, how do I champion on behalf of Hannah? And how do I tell these universities, I won't come back and speak until you pay Black women and people of color the very same rate that you're paying me? That's an accomplice. That will change a system. Right. It's not like a good deed, like, oh, they didn't pay Hannah as much as me, so I'm going to take Hannah out for dinner to make up for that. Well, that's like a nice thing to do, but it doesn't change this pay structure system going on. Right. And so you have to step in on that level. And to be an accomplice means you may lose some things, you know. There's a woman here in Kentucky named Ann Braden, and she is a white woman, and her husband bought a house for a Black couple. They tried to bomb the house. They were arrested for treason. This white couple was arrested for buying this home, but they were willing to go through that because they understood Black people should be able to live where they want and own homes. And they were willing to go through all of the things that they had to go through so that this family could own a home. That's an accomplice because often it's going to cost you something. It's not just as easy as sharing a post or kind of showing up in a crowd at a protest. It's going to cost you. You go into it knowing that. But you go into it knowing that because you're trying to fundamentally change a system.
And, you know, that piece of, you know, white people on and white systems and companies benefiting from Black community, you know, be it culture, be it clothing, music, and even history, you know, you just talked about the example of how, you know, people are still benefiting out of the stories of slavery.
Yeah.
But that money is going straight into the white
pocket. Right.
Nothing is, and there's so many stories of that, you know, still circulating, and those are the the items that we are still absolutely blind to. And this is exactly where this sort of Karen comes into, isn't it? You know, the fact that, you know, if your husband runs this institution doing these things and not giving back to the community that he's making money out of, and then, you know, she goes and votes for, you know, Obama or Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden and says, well, like you said, we are the good people, we are doing the good things, but they're not looking inwards about what are they, you know, all of the things that they are doing wrong.
Yeah. And you thank this the guy who runs Churchill Downs and his wife, like what influence does she have to say, you know, maybe you should read this letter, maybe she does have a point. Like, he's probably more willing to listen to it coming from you. Like, you have that power. Like, women, white women are not just kind of there. Like, oh, we just kind of got to go along with it and whatever our husbands say. Like, you, white women, women in general, in your home, you have a lot of power, you know, that you can pull some strings to kind of make things happen in the background. Like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be benefiting from this story of slavery. If people have to pay $15, like what if 100% of the proceeds went back to Black businesses and organizations? What if we did that? Like, you have that power. Like, I don't want people to think that you are defenseless and powerless when it comes to racism, because it's such a big issue. Like, you do have power to do something. You know, even if it's just the smallest conversation that might be able to shift someone's thinking, where this CEO will now be like, you know what? She is right. All proceeds are going to go to a Black business. Like, she's right about that. Like, you have the power to impact the people that are in your circle of influence, and everybody, whether it's one person, two people, or 2,000 people, everybody has this circle of influence that you can impact. But you have to go into it knowing sometimes it will be difficult. It may cost you. You know, it may cost you if you stand up in the PTA and say something. They may say, we're not going to vote for you next year. We no longer want you on the PTA committee. You know, you're not invited to our shindigs. Like, it may cost you that, but you have to take that into account. Are you willing to pay that price to speak up and stand on the right side of history? Are you willing to pay that price? Like, you don't want to get to the end of your life and say, I wish I had more courage to stand up and do the right thing. Like, even in this time in America, with everything that we've seen in these last 4 years, like, what will history say? Will you say, I wish I would have stood up when we were locking kids in cages and said something? I wish I would have stood up when we vilified an athlete for trying to stand up for justice. I wish I would have said something. You don't want to get to the end of your life and know, I was on the wrong side of history. I didn't have the courage. And it's not even the big things, right? Like, these big things that our world is doing. It could be, I should have stood up when the school didn't do this. I should have stood up when I noticed the school was expelling more Black kids than white kids. I should have stood up and said something when Black kids were not in AP classes. I should have stood up when the Black family on our block was being harassed, right? Like, it starts right in your own neighborhood. Like, what are you doing, like, right in your circle? I should have stood up at work when I knew that they weren't paying Black people fairly and equally. Why didn't I say something? And most of the times, people don't say something because they're afraid of what it's going to cost them. Instead of just saying, going into it, like making a decision, this is going to cost me, this may cost me, but I know I'm standing on the side of right. And who knows, you just might change the world by doing that.
And to bring it even closer to home, reflect on where you spend your money. If you're benefiting out of Black culture, say buying a hoodie, that originally came from Black culture. Are you buying it from Primark? Are you buying it from Gap?
Yeah.
Why don't you go straight to a Black business, a Black-owned business, and buy it from there? So your dollar, your money goes straight to the support, you know, Black business, supports where it came from.
Exactly. When people look at culture, I mean, Black culture moves so much in this world. You know, the music, the trends, the clothes, the this, the that. How you spend your money makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. And the thing is, spending your money with a Black creative, a Black artist, can really do a lot for them on a business level versus a Gap or an Amazon, or, and it's nothing against these companies, but it goes directly to that person that's creating and putting the stuff out into the world, right? And trying to make the world better. I think even with my blog, and people have asked me numerous times, Hannah, you should monetize your blog. You should monetize. And I said, no, I haven't been moved to monetize it yet. I just feel like I'm supposed to give this to the world. And it, you know, and people PayPal me, they can, or they don't have to. It makes me no difference. I'm not going to stop writing. I'm just going to keep giving this to the world, because I feel like this is, I'm giving you something to make this world better. Right. And so maybe people buy my books, or they might buy a t-shirt, or they might buy whatever, but, and that's great. If they do, wonderful. That only helps me, right? That only helps me continue to put out the things that I put out. And so that's how people need to look at it. When you support a Black creative, that allows them to continue to be. And often, if it's done enough, it will allow them to be and exist and create, where they're not in this space of this other 9-to-5 job that is kind of sucking everything out of them, because they're existing in this space that was not really designed for them. And they can completely focus on what they were put on this earth to do.
And ultimately, taking it back to basics, it's, you know, before we can understand others, we have to understand ourselves,
yep,
our own spending patterns, the businesses we invest in, the businesses we spend with, you know, what we do, where we eat, even simple domestic everyday things. Those are the things that add up and make the difference and, yep, perpetuate the system. You know, I read Melanie Morrison's article, Becoming Trustworthy White Allies. And this article is from 2013. However, one thing that really stuck with me was that you need to do this work from a place of self-love.
Yeah.
And I will quote a short paragraph in this work that explains this. So she wrote, "When people of color challenge me to understand what it means to be white, I don't think they are asking me to be consumed with guilt, shame, and self-hatred. On the contrary, I believe they want me to be met by white people who love themselves, in others, enough to do the deep work of truth-telling and healing, so that together we might repair the breaches that racism creates." And this stuck with me because I think people in power are deeply unhappy, disconnected, isolated, and consumed people. You know, power and money do not make you happy or do not make you love yourself more. Not in a selfless and pure way anyway. You know, these people are lonely, they're stressed, they're overwhelmed, and they're just spiritually unhappy.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? Would you agree with the sentiment behind this, that we have to start from a place of self-love?
I would completely agree with that. And I have often asked, like, people, even in America, when Donald Trump won, and it was still like, there's so much hate and anger. And I'm like, why are you so angry if the person you wanted to win won? Like, what are you mad at? Like, why are you that angry with Black people or with Jewish people or gay people? Like, why are you that mad to the point that you will kill someone simply because of the color of their skin? Like, what's going on with you that you're that angry, right? So when you open up your world to others and other thoughts and opinions and beliefs. It just makes you a well-rounded person. It does show you another way to love yourself, to say that I'm okay and I can love other people simply for who they are. Like, I don't have to hate anyone simply based on the color of their skin. Like, to carry the weight of that every day. How heavy is that for you? That you are carrying that around every single day. That you wake up hating Black people just for the mere fact that they're Black. And how different would your life be if you said, I can put this down. I don't have to carry that. Like, you are choosing, racist, you are choosing. You are making an active choice to get up every day and hate someone. And think about that. If people have been raised that way and they're like 50, 60 years old, you've carried that for a lifetime. That's like putting a boulder on your back and walking around with it for 50, 60 years. When all you had to do was put it down and do something different. It's really just that simple. You can literally wake up and say, today I choose love. I'm not going to hate. And I'm going to work on myself to understand why I felt the need to carry that around for 30, 40, 50 plus years. Like, it really is just that simple. I think it's a sad, sad life to wake up every day and straddle a boulder on your back for no reason.
Hannah, it has been my privilege to have this conversation with you, to hold this space for you, because your message is timeless and it needs to be heard far and wide. So thank you for your work. Thank you for your storytelling. I have learned a lot today, and I'd be surprised if the listener hasn't. And I'm privileged to, you know, have you on this platform and have the opportunity to share your story that hopefully will open eyes. But for that, we need to open our minds. So I hope the listeners have come to this platform and listened to this conversation today with open minds, and the conversation has opened your eyes today.
Thank you.
It's been emotional, Hannah. Thank you so much for being here, and you know, I can't thank you enough for, you know, the conversation that we had today. It's been very, like I said, emotional. It's been liberating. It's been educational. It's been it all and more.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Make an active choice to be better and do better. And start from a space of self-love. This work starts with you and within you. We as citizens of the world, and even more so leaders, need to pay a vigilant attention to how women, and especially women of color, experience the world. In professional settings, stay alert to inequities and disparities. As one white male executive once said, once you put on that lens, you can't take it off. The world never looks the same again. Assume racism is everywhere, every day. Just as economics influences everything we do, just as gender and gender politics influence everything we do, assume the racism is affecting your daily life too. Because it's true. And because the privilege of being white is the freedom to not deal with racism all the time. However, we have to learn to see the effect that racism has. Notice who speaks, what is said, how things are done and described. Notice who isn't present when these conversations take place. You already notice the skin color of everyone you meet. Now it's time to notice the difference it makes. Taking a stand against injustice can feel scary and difficult at first. It may bring up feelings of lack of self-confidence and fear of making mistakes, but ultimately, it is the only healthy and moral human thing to do. Please rate and review this podcast and join me in conversation using hashtag ChangeAgentPodcast on Twitter. Hannah's details are in show notes, so connect with her if you haven't already. and use my details below to reach out to me and talk about how I can help your organization with cultural intelligence and the leadership development on diversity, equity, and inclusion topics. In the meantime, I'll allow you to reflect on the material covered today, and we'll be looking forward to welcoming you here again next Friday. But for now, stay safe, and until next time.